and have a great evening.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the May 11th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's tip off with African basketball. Patriots of Rwanda will host Rivers Hoopers of Nigeria on May 16th in Kigali in the opening game of the inaugural Basketball Africa League season. Patriots and Rivers Hoopers are in Group A of the 12-team tournament, along with GNBC of Madagascar and U.S. Monastir of Tunisia. The vice captain of Rivers Hoopers is Ronald Alalibo, who plays the guard position. Iron Mike Mbonye asked Ronald what he thought about Group A.
Rivers Hoopers being in Group A with the Madagascan side, Tunisian side, and the host Rwandan side, it's not by mistake because it was done by the ball themselves. I don't think every team that's the same group with us are a pushover. Likewise, we too, we are not a pushover, but I believe that everybody is coming to be the best out of the group. So they're pushing. We are not underrating anybody. We've prepared our mind to face one game as it comes. So the group is, I would say, is okay in as much as everybody is beatable. Likewise, we too, we are beatable, but we just have to put our acts together not to be beatable because we want to come out top or to qualify from the group.
Rivers Hoopers will tip off the Basketball Africa League tournament on Sunday against home team, the Patriots of Rwanda. Are you scared or intimidated?
We have the very first game of the tournament against the hosting Patriots of Rwanda. We are not scared nor intimidated, but I know there are the factors that we are considering. The home fans, I know they are home, you know all these things that comes with home, the energy. But it's not a new thing, though it's a new tournament, but playing away is not a new thing for Rivers Hoopers. We'll try our best to see if we can contain the pressure that comes around playing away, which we've been doing over time. So I don't think we are scared or intimidated in any way. We'll face the game head up, do the things that we need, that is needed for us to do to win the game.
What's the mood in the camp ahead of the commencement of the tournament?
Our moods, the moods are high, hyped. You know, when you've been in the containment for far too long, you will be so anxious for the game to commence so that you showcase what you've been preparing for. You know, the ball is one of its kind. It's the inaugural edition. Everybody's looking onto anyone. Like we, the Rivers Hoopers, you know, Nigeria, this mentality of the Nigerian side being the best, one of the best in Africa. Everybody will be looking down on us, be looking up to us for us to do, to show what we get, what we have, what kind of skill that we have to put on the floor. At the same time, to our fans back home, they are all looking up to us. But at the same time, every mood in the camp is so hyped. They can't wait to just step on the floor and play basketball, good basketball to be precise. So morale is high, everybody's gingered up, everybody's hyped and ready to play basketball. So for now, we just keep talking to ourselves, try to psych one another to get our minds right. Because I know the COVID-19 protocols that is in place, making us to just stay, not to talk to ourselves more, but we'll try as much as possible to communicate to ourselves virtually, to psych ourselves, to keep the energy alive, to keep the energy going. Because we know this thing is very big compared to every other tournament that most of us have played.
That's Ronald Alalibo, the vice captain of Rivers Hoopers Basketball Club. Rivers Hoopers will play Patriots of Rwanda at the Kigali Arena on May 16th when the inaugural season of the Basketball Africa League tips off. And Ronald spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Kigali, Rwanda.
Sporty greetings. My name is Ronald Alalibo, the vice captain of Rivers Hoopers Basketball Club of Port Harcourt. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronald. Ronald Alalibo could find himself on the court in Kigali Sunday, playing against none other than American rap music star J. Cole. There are reports that the 36-year-old Cole is signing a deal to play in the Basketball Africa League with Rwanda's Patriots team. The New Times Rwanda first reported the news of Cole's arrival in Rwanda over the weekend. He is said to be in quarantine, and the deal could be officially announced later this week. Cole played basketball in high school and was briefly a walk-on player at St. John's University in New York City. However, he never played in a game for St. John's and ultimately left the program to focus on his music career. In National Basketball Association action Monday night, Washington Wizards guard Russell Westbrook broke Oscar Robertson's NBA record for triple-doubles. The AP's Mike Gracia reports.
Russell Westbrook of the Washington Wizards became the NBA's all-time leader in triple-doubles Monday night, passing Hall of Famer Oscar Robertson's 47-year-old record. Westbrook recorded the 182nd triple-double of his career, reaching the milestone with a rebound with 8:29 remaining in the fourth quarter of a 125-124 loss to the Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta. Westbrook, who finished with 28 points, 13 rebounds, and 21 assists, missed a potential game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer. Robertson's record, long considered untouchable, had stood since 1974. I'm Mike Gracia.
Thanks, Mike. Now let's go to San Francisco, California, where the Golden State Warriors edged the NBA-leading Utah Jazz by 3 points. The AP's Ryan Leong reports from San Francisco.
The Warriors beat the best team in the league, the Jazz, 119-116. Golden State is 3-0 in its season-ending six-game homestand. Stephen Curry with 36 points.
We're playing our best basketball in the sense of just understanding how we're supposed to win. And, you know, sometimes it goes our way, sometimes it doesn't. But that is a good feeling when you know the games that matter are here and approaching.
Jordan Poole added 20 off the bench.
The playoffs are, 8 days away. And every game that, you know, we have puts us in a better position, like playoff position. We got to continue to fight. You know, I mean, this is about time to, you know, to lock in more than we have, you know, the entire season and, you know, win some games down the stretch.
And Ken Bazemore had 19. Draymond Green with 12 points and 10 assists. The loss ended a five-game win streak for the Jazz. Jordan Clarkson with a game-high 41 points.
A few little things at the end, throughout the whole game, could have put us over the top tonight. So, like I said, we fought hard, showed that we didn't have no quit in us, and, you know, we ain't never out of games.
And Bojan Bogdanovic added 27. Ryan Leong, San Francisco.
Thanks, Ryan. In more NBA news, the Boston Celtics have suffered a big blow ahead of the playoffs. The team's all-star forward, Jaylen Brown, will miss the rest of the season with a torn ligament in his left wrist. The Celtics say Brown is expected to have surgery this week. He appeared to injure the wrist during Boston's 119-115 loss to Oklahoma City on April 27th, but said after the game he was fine. It was one of the best games of the season for Jaylen Brown, who finished with 39 points, 11 rebounds, and 4 steals. Overall this season, Jaylen Brown is averaging almost 25 points and 6 rebounds a game for the Celtics.
Sporty greetings. This is Ike Diagu, captain of the Nigerian men's national basketball team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Ike.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Fali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
And to quote Shaka, from the deepest better part of the bottom of my heart, I want to give a sunny side of sports salute to Shaka Sali for a memorable career at the Voice of America. Shaka is planning to retire at the end of May. In African boxing, Charles Lebulwa made history at the 1980 Moscow Olympics. In Russia, 41 years ago, at the age of 15, Charles climbed between the ropes and became the youngest Ugandan athlete to compete at an Olympics. Charles would go on to represent Uganda at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles and the 1988 Olympics in Seoul, South Korea. In this Olympic year, with our eyes focused towards Tokyo, where the opening ceremony will take place in 73 days, Magume Davis Rakawinj sat down with Charles Lebulwa in Kampala and asked him to reflect on his early days in boxing.
During those days, it was special boxing. That is, I can call it, it was a terrific one whereby you could meet anybody from any continent, most especially the Americans and these Greek people. They were very good at that game of boxing.
You and your two brothers, Fred Mutewita and Robert Lukanga, were also boxers. Mm-hmm. And but I understand that in 1977, you were still in O-level, and you had been selected to participate in the national championships. Then your parents decided to transfer you, rather, to another school because they didn't want you to participate in the boxing. Why?
Of course, parents never wanted that game. They thought that was a dubious sport. For these laymen, the leftovers, the bayayas. But then my parents knew what I was, because they knew I wanted sports during my young age. But then all the same, I forced myself, although the parents never wanted it, they forced me even to take me back to Masaka in a private school so that I don't face anything.
That is about 300 kilometers away from Kampala, from where you are.
Yeah, exactly. That's 330 kilometers. So after me camping myself into an organized group of boxers from my village where I used to stay in Naguru, I caught up with them, but then the parents were still at my neck saying, no, what to do? This boy, if he is coming back down here to box, I'm going to dismiss him from what? I'm going to tell the headmaster to dismiss him. But then he was just shaking me. It wasn't the truth. But then all the same, they are very keen to see that I study. Also study at my back of my head. Although I was doing boxing, but then even school was there.
They wanted you to first finish your education and then you do boxing.
Exactly. This is what they wanted. But then it was too late because I had entered into the sweet science of the game at that time.
And at 15 years... to be exact, actually, you were 15 years and 206 days when you represented Uganda at the Moscow Olympics as the youngest Ugandan ever to represent at the Olympics in boxing.
Yeah, it's very true that was my art. I was at that age, 15 something years, months. I had some nervosity. I was very nervous, not knowing what to do. But then, all the same, first time in the boxing ring at international level and the first competition in the boxing world. And then, exactly, this was my first time. I felt the principles of boxing were even into me, because by that time, being my first international exposure, it was a very traumatic space of when I was in Moscow. Everybody was, hey, young man, how do you box? But then I said, I used to tell them, you will see me in the ring. But unfortunately, my first fight, which I boxed, I lost it from a Hungarian gentleman.
Yeah, Gedo, because he was a very experienced person.
Exactly. Gedo was very experienced because he was a silver medalist in the Montreal Games in 1976. By that time, I wasn't in boxing. I hadn't reached that level. Mm.
Yeah. And 3 years later, actually, you also immediately represented Uganda at Melbourne Olympic Commonwealth Games, where you actually reached the quarterfinals.
Yeah, exactly. That one, it was a fight for death, and because my opponent whom I faced was a Kenyan from Kenya, because I beat him in Eastern Central twice. But then when we went for those Olympics, I lost to him in the quarterfinals, and I felt very, very, very decent, because the man whom had he hit twice, and then we come in such a game and he hits me. I said, no, possibly the judges were not. But then the truth was I lost to the man.
Yeah. Yeah, and now you are getting experience. In 1984, you got your chance, your first victory at the Los Angeles Olympics in the United States, where you defeated the Australian Shane Knox on points.
Exactly.
Do you think it was experience, or you think by luck you had gotten a weaker opponent?
No, it wasn't a weaker opponent. It was experience and my technical advice was mounted into me to see to it that I overhauled that man.
And at the 1988 Seoul Games, you are to get a chance to represent Uganda now for the third time as an Olympian.
Yeah.
And you did not only go there, I think it was like a history in making. You went there with your brother, Fred Muteweta, and you also were the captain of the Bombers.
Yes.
It was like many things in you at that time.
Yeah, there were very many things in me, the experience, the know-how, and everything, and how to handle such situations when I'm invited for. At the same time, on that trip, I felt very amazed when I lost to a Nigerian. That Nigerian was almost a brother to the other one whom I lost in Los Angeles. They were brothers. And then when I lost, but I wasn't contented. Although the decision was made, I wasn't contented, but I couldn't change anything. Things would go like that.
It's like you had bad luck fighting Nigerians.
Exactly. Not bad luck, because all the draws were coming on the advantage. Whenever I meet a Nigerian, I lose. I don't know why. But then I was statistic and very enthusiastic to see to it that I must become a champion the most coming years.
And then earlier on, this is where you had won gold. I think is it in Bayern Munich? You had won gold for Uganda 1985.
1985, yeah. 1985, we went to Germany, Bundesliga, boxing, whatever, and I won a gold medal. I beat German descent from that tournament.
Away from home, you beat someone who was on his home ground.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't easy going. But then I stressed, because the technique I used to those days were very unique, because even others do not use it, which we used to face when we were there, because fainting was very important. And once I fainted, I could get an advantage of hitting my opponent and kill him.
Wow.
Wow, indeed, Magume. Magume was talking with Charles Labulwa, a 3-time Olympian for Uganda in boxing. And we'll hear part 2 of their conversation on Wednesday's show, right here on the Sunny Side of Sports.
My name is Charles Lubula, former national boxing team captain of Uganda, and at all levels, three-time Olympian and two-time Commonwealth Games, plus the All-African Games. You are now listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the African Women's Football Beat, the draw for the qualifying competition for the 2022 Women's Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Morocco has been held in Egypt. Morocco automatically qualified as the host country. A total of 44 African women's teams are scheduled to take part in the qualifiers in what might be the spiciest of the 22 ties in the first round. The Black Queens of Ghana will go against the defending champion Super Falcons of Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Randy Waldrum, coach of the Super Falcons of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Nigeria's American head coach, Randy Waldrum, says, and I quote, "I think you always embrace the challenge. Obviously, the draw is difficult. We have a lot of respect for Ghana, and we know the strength and power of that team. But as far as the pressure of the job and the task at hand, I think that's something any competitor truly embraces." Meanwhile, Ghana's head coach, Mercy Tago, says, and I quote, "When things like this happen, it gives you the strength to work extra hard. When Ghana is meeting Nigeria, it's like tug of war. Nigeria respects Ghana, and Ghana also respects Nigeria so much. For now, we need to go and prepare well to meet Nigeria." The 2020 Women's Africa Cup of Nations tournament was canceled because of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the 2022 event also doubles as the African qualifiers to the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup, which will be co-hosted by Australia and New Zealand. The top four African teams in Morocco next year will qualify for the Women's World Cup, and two more African teams will advance to Interconfederation playoffs with another chance to advance to Australia, New Zealand 2023.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Steve. That's my VOA colleague, Steve Miller. In European club football, supporters of both Chelsea and Manchester City are calling on UEFA to move the upcoming Champions League final out of Istanbul, Turkey. And it appears UEFA hears those calls. Plans are now underway to switch venues because of COVID-19 concerns in Turkey. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with more details. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Premier League football clubs Manchester City and Chelsea will face each other in the Champions League at the end of the month to play for the biggest prize in European football. The final match was set to take place in Istanbul, Turkey, but the excitement has been overshadowed recently by concerns surrounding the coronavirus pandemic. Last week, the president of Turkey announced the country had entered a full lockdown until mid-May to curb a surge in COVID-19 infections and related deaths. Following that announcement, the UK government placed Turkey on its red list for travel, which means players and anyone in attendance for the Champions League final would face a 10-day quarantine upon their return. Daniel Silver is the spokesman for the Chelsea Supporters Trust. And on Monday, he told Reuters News that Turkey being named a red list country is reason enough to move the Champions League final out of Istanbul.
Hopefully government pressure as well will hopefully make common sense. It's reckless to send anybody over to Istanbul, given the circumstances we're all in. Normally, the whole point of a European final is getting away, but now, given the pandemic and the fact that Istanbul is not kind of locked down until next week, I think, and also from a bigger perspective, we fought as a country so hard through lockdowns, et cetera, to take 10,000 official supporters out there, plus unofficial supporters. It just could be a catastrophe. I just think from a public health perspective, it needs to be moved back to the UK because they're both English teams, minimises travel, and I think it has to be the most logical way forward.
UEFA, UK government officials, and the Football Association met on Monday to discuss a change in venue. Early reports say the final match will be staged in either London, England, or Lisbon, Portugal. Two logical choices for Kevin Parker of the Manchester City Supporters Club.
Nobody wants to see the final in Istanbul because it means nobody's going to be able to go. You know, that affects City supporters and Chelsea supporters as well. So there's no possibility of anybody being able to go if it's there. So the first port of call would obviously be a stadium in the UK. Wembley seems the most obvious one, perhaps. Millennium Stadium or Hampden Park or even at a push, I suppose, Windsor Park in Northern Ireland. They're all stadiums which will be easier for English-based supporters to get to with very little COVID protocol. There will be some, but nothing that's too difficult. Although I am hearing now this afternoon that UEFA might be switching their allegiance from Istanbul to Wembley to Portugal. That's going to be better than Istanbul, of course. Still creates its own problems because Portugal is amber, so there is still some COVID protocols for fans to follow. Both before and after they go to Portugal. But certainly Portugal's a better option than Istanbul, and we would certainly like it to be held at Wembley if it could be.
Wembley Stadium, as the host venue, would allow up to 25,000 supporters to attend the match. And with Portugal on the UK green list, players and spectators would be able to travel without quarantine. A final decision on the new venue will be made quickly to ensure the Champions League final match will take place as scheduled on May 29th. That decision could be made as early as Wednesday. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Sporting greetings. This is William Cho-Sekong from Watford Football Club and Nigeria Super Eagles. You're listening to the Sunny Sides of Sports on the Voice of America.
In English Premier League football Monday, Burnley scored a 2-0 road victory against Fulham. Ashley Westwood and Chris Wood had the goals for Burnley. The win moves Burnley up to 14th on the Premier League table with 39 points. But bad news for Fulham. Fulham had to avoid defeat to avoid relegation. As a result, Fulham becomes the third and final team to be relegated from the English Premier League. Sheffield United and West Bromwich Albion were already relegated. that wraps up the May 11th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.